On this episode, I have Will Ross. He is the CEO and co-founder of Federato. We're going to be talking about enterprise adoption of AI. We're going to be talking about how it impacts the insurance industry, kind of run through some of the backstory, how it's being applied and where it's going. Will's got a fantastic background in this space. I know he's passionate. I'm super excited to have you on. So thank you for your time.
Yeah, no, thank you. Thanks for having me, Amir.
Awesome, man. So before we dive in, the company, could you let everyone know what you guys do there?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the CEO and co-founder at Federato. And Federato is a vertical AI application that's focused in on the property and casualty insurance industry. And specifically, if you've heard of insurance, you might have heard of a position called the underwriter. And what's really important about this role in that industry is it affects both the top and bottom line of growth. Because when you originate a risk, not only are you collecting premium, that premium has to be adequate to then cover the future claims of that. And there just aren't a lot of roles in a lot of other industries that have this both kind of top and bottom line nature, right? We often talk about kind of the front of the house revenue generating role versus the back of house kind of cost type role. And so specifically, we focus on helping underwriters go through kind of their job to be done, go through the process of underwriting, but do so in the context of an entire organization. And again, this is a really cool and unique problem that is the same problem the insurance industry has been trying to solve for decades, one of portfolio management. I want to have a balanced portfolio. I don't want to have too many homes in a wildfire zone or too many homes in a hurricane zone. But what we're able to do is we're able to take advantage of several recent technology trends, one of which is AI, right? To really move the needle forward and help them do the same thing they've always been doing, but just do it in a really totally different and totally radical way that really moves the needle for them in terms of the traditional performance metrics that they've seen. So, you know, look forward to diving into it in more detail, but in a nutshell, that's what we do.
Awesome, man. I mean, it sounds like an area of insurance that's ripe for AI. It seems like it's very data rich, very repetitive. You know, you're looking at specific criteria factors to make sure things get approved. I guess when you're looking at AI, and again, we've heard this previously with other technologies, right? You know, with self-driving cars, with cryptocurrency, AI has been around for a while, but it's becoming really mainstream, and we're seeing the application in different industries pop up. When you look at the insurance industry and you think of AI and you think of what people see AI as and where it's going to go, is there a disconnect or are we just on the first phase of the journey?
Yeah, to be honest, I don't think we're on the first phase. I think I have a little bit different perspective when it comes to AI than most people. And I'll borrow from a good friend, a guy named Constantine Bueller, partner at Sequoia Capital, here a little bit. You know, my philosophy around AI is that the definition of AI is a constantly shifting and moving target, right? And Constantine formulated this idea recently. He wrote a great article about it where he talked about the AI paradox. Maybe we can put a link to that. But the basic idea of the AI paradox is that what we define as AI has changed and will change again. Right? It's changed before and it will change again. What we're calling AI right now, we will not call AI in just a matter of a few years. And if you think about it, the term AI comes from technologies back in the 1950s that were being called AI at the time. Those technologies today resemble more like very, very simple compute type engines that we would never dream of calling AI. Then you think about things like IBM and Deep Blue and a chess playing system. At the time, this was like the era of expert systems and AI. That was definitely called AI at the time, and it wasn't being called that. And then you fast forward to today, where most of the focus is on generative AI, things that are very closely related to sort of the underlying technologies that made ChatGPT, which is an application, right? Not just an AI, it's a specific application, made that possible. And already the stuff that when I was getting my start, you know, 10, 15 years ago in this space, and deep neural networks had really come onto the scene, and image classification was getting good, and speech to text was getting good. You know, we're now calling that traditional AI, right? You know, so it'll eventually not be called AI, and the next thing will not be called AI. The truth is, we all touch things that at one time were called AI pretty much every day. And in insurance, it's no different, right? That's why I say, like, is this just inning one? No, to be honest, like, there's been an inning 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, right? This is just the start of a next wave. And so the much more interesting conversation to have is, what is possible with this wave? And I'm happy to use the AI moniker, and I'm thrilled with the level of attention being paid, because what ChatGPT did do was it made the aha moment of, wow, there's been a really mainstream breakthrough, come to the forefront for board members and CEOs and people that for the last decade or so, even though there'd been some pretty big breakthroughs then as well, it hadn't been as front as mine. So it's exciting. But yeah, I mean, the truth is, like, AI is this continuous journey, and whatever we call AI in any moment, don't expect that to be called AI in a few years. And I don't have a crystal ball. I don't know what that next thing is, but it tends to fade into the background. And at that point, that's just sort of how we do things. It's just technology.
You mentioned ChatGPT. You mentioned executives. With the conversations you're having, obviously you guys at Federado, you're solving a particular problem. When you're talking to leaders, maybe even outside of, you know, the exact market you're selling into, but when you're talking to leaders, stakeholders, when they're thinking about AI, are they aware of the problem, as we call AI, what it can solve? Or is there any disconnect because of maybe the way ChatGPT has been adopted, used, and there's maybe a misrepresentation of what that product would look like within, let's say, underwriting?
It's a mixed bag, right? I mean, I had a meeting this morning in New York City with a very, very sophisticated CIO who I can tell you, like, he's been around the block. He's seen these things. His background is truly as an engineer, and he clearly spikes on an interest in machine learning, and, you know, no confusion there, right? But certainly as you get to more the leadership levels, et cetera, and those people, yeah, there's always going to be a bit of that. They've played with ChatGPT. And so the more natural thing they're thinking is, well, what if I can ask, I ask questions and it kind of answers them back. How could I apply that exact modality, where I ask a question, which isn't even like the type of it, and like that's just a UI UX for interacting with the system, and then it answers me. And the answers is sort of the modality of AI there. It's generative. It's generating the question from a corpus of information that's sitting underneath it, right? Using the query, the question, as the sort of initiation point. And so what can happen is they limit themselves to their understanding. They constrain themselves. And there's nothing wrong with that, because there probably are great examples of how a QA interface type thing can be used in insurance. But what they may not step back to look at is they might go, okay, well, that's what ChatGPT can teach me about AI. But what can the type of AI that's used in Netflix teach me, right? That's a very different type of AI. It's not generative AI. It's segmentation-based AI, right? What can the type of AI that's used in Uber teach me? Well, that's a very different type of AI too. That's sort of a portfolio optimization, a logistics optimization type API, right? And then we think about like something as simple as weather, right? Believe it or not, like the weather apps of today, and this is a little bit of my formal training in the space, the weather apps of today are using incredibly sophisticated AI. But because we've been predicting the weather for decades, we've just changed the way we do it. No one thinks about the AI aspect of it, but there's something about that that can teach us something. And as I go through those sort of four categories of, you know, prediction, optimization, segmentation, and yes, generation, which is sort of the word of the moment, generative AI, there are examples I can point to in all four categories that apply to insurance. In all four categories, we have things within our product that sort of fit that bill. And so what it really becomes about is helping them understand, yes, this is it, but you're almost seeing it. As crazy as it might seem to you, you're actually seeing 1/10 of the pie, and you already think that's a lot. But what if the other 10ths of the pie are actually more valuable to you? And let me come in, let us have a conversation. Let's see if we can educate you about those. And then you tell me what's going to be most valuable to your business, right? If that QA type feature is what we're hearing from our customers is really going to move the needle for them, absolutely, we'll go build that. But the truth is, it's not, right? We've heard very firmly from our customers when we share other examples of what's possible with these latest underlying AI advancements. What they gravitate towards in terms of the business impact for their business are very different things, right? And so, yeah, it's just a narrowness thing, and that's okay, right? That's our job. Our technology sales is all about education at the end of the day. And our job is to get out there and educate our customers.
I think that's great the way you broke the four types of AI. I think that was an awesome way to look at it. And I do think some of what you're mentioning, we're going to see a shift in people's perceptions of what AI is. A question I've asked, and you mentioned stakeholders, and obviously you bring optimization, you bring other value to them. When you're talking to people who are adopting the product, and we're talking about ROI, we're talking about licensing, we're talking about, you know, how you sell an AI product, because it's different, right? Before it was, hey, per seat, per you know, I've seen now models of, you know, code generators, it's lines of code. It's a different conversation because there's a different expectation. Does the product get positioned and sold differently because of that?
Yeah, maybe in some cases, but not for us, right? The way we thought about it, and we've been an AI company since day one, and you know, ChatGPT came many years after we had started the company and already had customers banging away and using many of our AI features. And have we brought some more features in as well that take unique advantage of these sort of very specific things that large language models and the other tech underlying ChatGPT can do? We have, right? We don't have a single QA interface in our product today, but we have brought those sorts of LLM type embeddings and things into our product. But it's all being brought into our product, right? That's really our position is, at the end of the day, our job is to have a product there that helps the underwriter do their job, helps them underwrite an account in front of them. Our goal is to almost make the AI fade into the background. In fact, this is the thing that causes that AI paradox through time. All the best products do this, right? Again, like you just think about the features that were called AI in the past and what's called AI now. No one talks about Netflix as being AI. They just go, oh, right, they give me some recommendation. But there are some extraordinarily sophisticated segmentation algorithms being used to try and segment you into a series of people who are like Amir, right? And then say, here are the things that people like Amir watched, right? And It's an interesting example because some people might go, oh, we're trying to predict what Amir watches. And, you know, there are places to do the same thing using prediction. But in Netflix's case, just because of the shape of the problem, it actually makes more sense to try and say, who's Amir most like? And then what did they watch? Because there's not that much content, right? And so the truth is, like, if people were pretty similar to Amir and they both watch these things, like, they're probably both going to enjoy these other things. And that turns out to be a faster and easier way to solve the same problem, right? And so it's sort of an interesting moment.
Insurance strikes me as a great use case for these different applications of AI. Lots of data process. There seems to be a lot of pieces that would fit really well to bringing a lot of that value to the industry.
Yeah, no, massively. And let's take like a very real example. One thing we really love talking about is something we call winnability modeling. Now, if you talk to the insurance industry, how does insurance work? A submission comes in, I sort of go through the underwriting process, I get to a price and a proposed set of coverage terms, and I give you a quote. That quote is like an offer, and you decide whether to accept it or not. And if you accept it, we sort of move forward and get you a policy. Well, there's a sort of translation there, which is when I decide to work on the thing in the first place and then go through the effort to quote it, you can imagine that the more often I can win those quotes, the better, because I have to do the work to get to the quote anyways. And so winnability is all about, can I get a higher percentage of my quotes to actually go through and bind a policy to accept what I've quoted to them? And that's a really basic idea. And it's something that's been measured in insurance companies forever, right? They call it the hit ratio, industry term, but they call it the hit ratio. How often do I hit when I quote, right? Simple idea. But what these technologies have allowed us to do is in the early days of our company, we really focused on the relational databases that existed underneath these companies. There were so much data just that was structured data that we could use to learn about an account. Oh, the account has this many vehicles. It has this many physical property locations. It has this, it has this, it has that. Then what we were doing was basically predicting the likelihood that we would win if we quoted it at the price we're proposing. And that could be used to help underwriters decide which ones to focus on. If you get the underwriters to focus on the one you're more likely to win, you can increase the hit ratio, which is increasing the efficiency of your business. Because if you don't win it, it's complete waste, right? It's total deadweight economic loss. And so we were focused on this from a relational perspective. Now, this is a great example where ChatGPT came along, these foundational large language models started to be more and more mainstream, more and more open source, easier and easier to work with, right? And all of a sudden we saw an opportunity to, when you get that submission, yeah, there's some structured data you get to make out, but you often get sort of PDFs, things like that. There's a lot of information about the web, on the web about these businesses, et cetera. There's this tremendous opportunity to then apply these large language models to get an embedding based on that submission information and then feed that into that winnability model is just additional signal for the model to pick up to. And what we're really excited about is we've managed to move the needle considerably. We now are able to go to our customers and let's say their hit ratio before was 20%. We've managed to, across our whole customer base, the range is 9 to 24%. We've managed to move them from 20% to 29% on the low end. And in some cases, move them from 20% to, I guess, plus 24 would be 44% on the high end. I mean, 9 to 24%, that is wild, Amir, right? And that's like, by just injecting that, we were already seeing results in sort of the low single digits with just the relational data. But by just injecting some of that even more data that's available out there, much of which is just from the public domain, we're able to move that needle with that winnability even easier. Now, how does winnability manifest in the product? It's like at the end of the day, to the underwriter, it's, you know, each account's another row and the winnability is like another column. It's just like a score. But if you sort it by what's most winnable and you work top down, you're going to have a higher hit ratio, right? And it's a little thing, but it really can move the needle for a company. It doesn't really have anything to do with generative AI. It might have something to do with large language models, but it's actually really a prediction type motion. And again, you're moving the needle for the company in a real way. But we don't charge for that, right? There's no charge. It's just inherent. It's running in the background of our product. We basically get a flag once there's accumulation of enough data that we believe we can create an influence on their results. And then we basically flick a feature flag and boom, all of a sudden that new model is running in that instance. And so it's sort of a cool thing. And we think this is what's going to happen a lot more with AI is the AI is going to be very embedded in lots of different ways of products and people are going to find ways to shift the needle. And that's how they'll further differentiate their products. But that may well be a workflow application like us that has lots of different aspects of AI working underneath the hood.
Yeah, I think that's I think that use case of how the product works hand in hand with the user providing that additional information, that additional context. I guess we hear a lot, you know, whenever new things come around, we always hear about the downfall of humans. We're all going to lose our jobs. We're all going to be unemployed. I don't know what's going to happen. The more I talk to founders and I'm listening to the products that are rolling out that are really co-pilots that are adding value to somebody's job, if you were putting on your, looking into your crystal ball down the road and thinking how a role evolves, like we're talking about the underwriting industry, how much is this an additional help to the person doing the job versus, hey, you know what? They'll just need less people to potentially do this down the road.
Yeah, you know, I'll answer it a couple different ways, but something we say sometimes is we want to make every underwriter a portfolio underwriter, right? Historically, the way insurance has worked are their underwriters just kind of taking what comes in and working on it with no ordering, no prioritization whatsoever. And then there were sort of portfolio people who would kind of look at it in the back end and go, okay, how badly did we mess up and how are we going to get ourselves out of this one? So you can kind of think of it as like large course corrections at long time intervals, kind of quarterly, annually, even in this industry, right? But when we think about sort of making every underwriter portfolio underwrite, you want them to be like, it's like I said, that it's something as simple as an ordered list of their accounts. And that order is predicated on, yeah, the winnability, which we talked about, but also the portfolio fit. And this is like, again, this is just a fundamental and simple idea to insurance. But in that scenario, I don't really see a situation in which I'm removing someone from the process at all. What I like to think about is rather than thinking about a business process and a person you can take out, imagine a business process with a key decision maker like an underwriter. And imagine if you could hit pause on time. And imagine if that underwriter could run around and figure out all the other accounts and get that perfect mathematical equation of what the right thing to do would be. And then they could hit play, do the right thing and whatever. How much better would that be? And that's exactly what we have here. We have a chance to move towards portfolio optimization. I'll give you a corollary to this portfolio management example that has had really good results for our customers as well. I love to talk about Uber in the context of this sort of optimization portfolio. Let's think about the taxi dispatch industry. Okay. Back in the day, taxis would radio back and forth with their dispatcher, and the dispatcher would have a cork board with a map with like a red pin, and the red pin would be the last known location of the taxi. Then Amir would call me up and he'd say, hey, I'd love a ride. And I'd take out my green pin and I'd put the green pin. So what was the dispatcher's job? It probably makes sense that the dispatcher was kind of eyeballing and trying to minimize the overall distance between red and green pins by pairing sets of red and green pins. Because that's what was closest. That was what was fastest. Now, fast forward to Uber. What is Uber doing? It's also trying to minimize the distance. Now, it's taking advantage of some underlying technology trends. Namely, it actually knows where the driver is. It actually knows where the person who wants to be picked up is because of the GPS in their phones. It's looking at traffic data. So it's not just looking at absolute distance. It's actually looking at driving time. But at the end of the day, it's trying to get red pins close to green pins, right? And so what it did was it sort of hit the magic pause button and said, what if I could go out, call my buddy, figure out where the traffic is, figure out exactly where these people are, then take all the time, get this totally right, et cetera. It removed an inefficiency in this optimization sort of portfolio process, in that case, a logistics problem that inherently existed. And that's exactly what we're doing in insurance through kind of our core aspect of our platform, the risk ops piece, is we're giving people the ability to hit that pause button, right? But they're solving the same problem. The problem has not changed. It's red pins and it's green pins. We want to optimize the portfolio in the same way we've always optimized it. What we're doing is we're taking advantage of underlying technology and underlying improvements in optimization modeling specifically to be able to do that. And that's really, really cool, right? That's really, really powerful. But in that context, you sort of look at it and go, does it really lend itself to like, oh, and this job will disappear as a result? No, it's just adding to the overall efficiency of an ecosystem. And that's kind of what gets us fired up. We think that's AI doing something that no human could have done versus trying to take away something that a human did do. And that's like, I'd much rather work on that problem, right? So that's the stuff that gets us fired up every day.
I love it, man. I think that's a good way of viewing it. And I appreciate your thoughts. I appreciate your time. I know you got to get back to the job, but if somebody does want to reach out to you, I know you covered a lot of different components within insurance, constructs in AI. Is there a good way if somebody can touch base with you if they want to just kind of pick your brain or continue the conversation?
Yeah. Maybe to a fault, I'm way too liberal about giving out my email, but anyone can email me anytime. My email is WLROSS, so WL Ross at Federato, FEDERATO.AI. So WL Ross at Federato.AI. I love hearing from people who are passionate about these topics. I love hearing from people who really want to think first principles about these topics. And, you know, we love hearing about people from people in our industry who are looking for that education, right? And saying, yeah, I've been scratching my head with how can this ChatGPT thing apply to me? And I'm realizing maybe it's not just this ChatGPT thing, but I'm still willing to listen because that has woken me up to, yeah, that underlying technology base, it really has shifted. So really appreciate your time as well, Amir, and we'll catch you next time.
Absolutely. Definitely. We'll include your email in the show notes so somebody can reach out to kind of do what you just said, and definitely appreciate it. And that's it for the episode. Back again, different guests, different topic. Two things. One, I really love the insurance industry, and I love how AI is going to make changes and improvements. And we're going to see some of these optimizations that Will was running us through, and super exciting. We'll have to keep watch and maybe have Will come back in a little bit and tell us how things have changed and improved and progressed, and share this episode with somebody else that might also benefit. If you want me to cover a specific topic, let me know. I'll find a guest to do that. Until then, please like, subscribe, share, do all those things. And until next time, thank you and goodbye.